The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known to you as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Wow, we've expanded to the whole state. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's Reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and underwriting our program for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Call them up, say thank you. Okay, we are now going to return to the September 2019 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month, and we always do have a theme, is Built to Last, the enduring legacy of North Carolina's beloved barns. We did the pictorial last time. Let's get started on the main articles. Good bones. In North Carolina, barns are our beloved landmarks, our version of ancient fading castles connecting us to our history. The weathered planking, no matter how cracked and splintered, looks sturdy and stately, rising from a field of broom sedge. Slumping below vines, the oldest barns remind us of the mule and plow, the milk and the bucket and the stool for the milking, the air-cured burley tobacco. These are structures built to last, even if only in memory, which is why a beautifully restored barn quickens the heart, and one painted with colorful quilt squares makes us smile. Sure, we dream up new uses for them today, as an art studio, a shop, a home. But the purpose of a barn remains the same, to protect what we need and value most. Picture here accompanying this little series of articles header is a white barn, somewhat in need of a painting. The roof looks in good condition. It has two big air vents at the top, and we're looking across probably some of that broom sedge that they referred to in the write-up up front. And the caption says, after decades of housing dairy operations, this historic white barn in Yadkin Valley is now home to Grassy Creek Winery. Overleaf, classic red barn with some of the panels that are painted red, the boards in horizontal position, and some of them are at a diagonal to make a pattern on the barn. And then there's a classic unpainted shed-type barn that is one level high to its right. The barns of Madison County. Tobacco barns once dotted the Appalachian landscape in the thousands before a government buyout in 2004 brought an end to that way of life. Now passionate locals are recording their stories and giving these iconic structures a second chance, written by C.A. Carlson. In the hushed and dusty loft of Evelyn Anderson's barn, not far from Mars Hill, time has come to a hard stop. Someone could have gotten up from that old chair, put down that yellowed newspaper, and finished the soda in that empty bottle just a few minutes ago, if it weren't for the cobwebs. A child might have thrown that bicycle down when he was called in to supper. Like the ruins of Pompeii, the barn is frozen life at the moment of cataclysm, not in this case, the eruption of Vesuvius, but the federal tobacco buyout of 2004, which brought an end to an era of agriculture here in Madison County. Today, though, the barn's silence is broken by the delighted shouts of kids who have just been given permission to jump into an old pile of hay, and by more intrepid adults climbing the rickety stairs to the loft. Anderson has welcomed these visitors to her farm, which has been in her late husband's family since 1797, as part of a tour with Taylor Barnhill, lead researcher for the Appalachian Barn Alliance. The barn is one of more than 100 that the organization has documented in Madison County to preserve and share the history of the structures, along with the stories of the people who made them. You try to imagine people with just hand tools building these things, Barnhill says, looking with an architect's admiration at the barn's framework. These doors, those 6-inch square posts, how much work did that take? That beam up there, that's one log that started out as a tree just up on the ridgeline. The hills around the farm also supplied sassafras trees for the sleds that mountain farmers used to transport nearly everything. "We hauled tobacco on them when I was a kid," recalls Ross Young, the extension director for Madison County, and a founder of the Appalachian Barn Alliance, who has joined the tour today with his two sons. From spring through fall, Barnhill brings tour groups, mainly visitors and new arrivals to the region, drawn by the cachet of Asheville and the beauty of the Blue Ridge Mountains, to the Anderson Barn. "Understanding these barns helps you understand the people who built them," Barnhill says. "Despite the stereotypes, these weren't lazy hillbillies. They were some of the hardest working people on the planet." The daunting mountain landscape of western North Carolina wasn't settled by European Americans until the late 18th and early 19th centuries, nearly 200 years after the first coastal colonies. The Scots-Irish farmers who patched together a living from the rocky, sloping fields had to be infinitely tough and entirely self-sufficient. It was 100 years before a cash crop gave these families, Robinsons and Robertses, Sheltons and Andersons, names that still dominate the hills and hollers, a chance at something more than subsistence. Flue-cured tobacco came into the county after the Civil War, and eventually most farms had little plots of its tucked around in their cornfields and pastures. Many mountain women grew a patch in their kitchen garden and sold it for spending money. "I knew a lady who grew tobacco to pay for her false teeth," Barnhill says. By the 1920s, these plots and patches were mostly planted with burley tobacco, an air-cured variety that didn't require the same heat treatment as the flue-cured varieties that were more popular in the eastern parts of the state. What burley tobacco did require was space and air to dry the leaves. Many farmers converted their old barns from livestock to burley or knocked out the mud chinking between logs on their flue-cured tobacco barns to create better airflow. Federal price support for the tobacco industry encouraged more western North Carolina farmers to get into the game, and Madison County eventually became top in the state for burley. As late as the 1990s, more than half of the county's population, about 10,000 out of 20,000 people, was involved in tobacco farming. Young says, a fourth-generation tobacco farmer himself, he spent much of his childhood in his family's burley barns. "There were times when we spent more time in those barns than we did in the house or at school," he says. After the tobacco had been harvested and hung, there would be the process of casing and classing, softening the dried leaves enough that they would be sorted by quality and packed for sale. At peak times, that could stretch from 4 p.m. when Young got home from school until midnight or beyond. Families and neighbors would come together to help each other at every stage of the process. "I didn't recognize it then, but looking back on it, a whole lot of community happened when you were sitting in those barns at night, just talking with neighbors, friends," Young says. Young boys, like me, heard stories of manhood in these barns and probably grew up a little. You weren't off in a bedroom by yourself. You weren't on Nintendo. You were with your elders, often three generations there, talking. That's something you don't get now, and I really appreciate it now that it's gone. It's gone because in 2004, the Fair and Equitable Tobacco Reform Act, known in these parts and elsewhere as the Tobacco Buyout, ended federal price support for the industry and opened it to global competition. That was the eruption of Vesuvius. The number of tobacco farms in the burly belt of western North Carolina dropped from 2707 in 1997 to 74 in 2012, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. With the help of organizations like the North Carolina Cooperative Extension and the Appalachian Sustainable Agriculture Project, some farmers transitioned to other crops, but many simply left farming altogether. And the barns that had been at the center of family and community life for generations, more than 10,000 of them, young estimates, were either repurposed or left empty. Almost immediately you saw fields growing up where tobacco had been, and you saw barns deteriorating, Young says. Old wooden buildings need near constant attention and maintenance to resist the elements, wood-boring insects, and the forces of gravity and time. It doesn't take long for a barn to go from functional to picturesque to decrepit. Young saw it happening before his eyes. In my opinion, those barns were the most iconic symbol of Madison County's agricultural heritage, and they were falling by the wayside, he says. One day in 2011, Young shared his desire to save some of the county's agricultural history with Sandy Stevenson, a retired high school history teacher and now the part-time director of the Madison County Visitor Center. A Midwest native, she understood what barns meant to Young and what they could mean to visitors in the region. When you look at a barn, you think of a time when life was simpler, when people worked hard and worked together, she says. I haven't met a single person who doesn't say, "Oh, I love barns." Stevenson and Young soon gathered a group that became the Appalachian Barn Alliance. Stevenson took on the role of president, and Barnhill, a familiar figure to hundreds of Madison County residents, was contracted to document barns and their history through agricultural architectural drawings, photos, and interviews. His last name, the word for the earthen banks into which his Scottish ancestors would build their barns, he says, is just one of the coincidences that suits him to the work. A native of the Piedmont, Barnhill spent summers on his uncle's tobacco farm in eastern North Carolina, and he studied architecture at North Carolina State University and regional planning at UNC Chapel Hill. After a stint as a consulting architect with the Hot Springs Health Program in the 1970s, he bought a farm and settled in the area. I was part of the first Back to the Land movement 40 years ago, and the local people were so welcoming, even though we looked like bearded hippies, he recalls. Barnhill married a woman whose family went back seven generations in Madison County, a connection that helped him when he did an architectural survey of the area for the state in the 1980s. He interviewed hundreds of residents about the history of their properties and has gone back to many of them in his work for the Barn Alliance. One of the most popular stops on Barnhill's tours is the creekside farmstead of James and Geneva Roberts. The property, blooming with American wisteria and other native species that Geneva carefully cultivates, has been in the Roberts family for more generations than James can rightly recall. While he's mostly retired from farming, he still tills his garden with the help of a 29-year-old mule named Jack, just as nimble as the mules who helped James's ancestors plow their sloping fields. Jack makes his home in one of the several barns to survive on Robert's property. No one is quite sure when that barn was built, but it's old enough that the new addition, built by James's grandfather and aunt, dates back to 1924. Across the road and up a holler, there's an old flue-cured tobacco barn, one of the few remaining in the country. My daddy could tell you all about it if he were still alive, James says, eyeing the log building. They'd leave him and a bunch of the boys here overnight to keep the fire going. When the farm switched over to burley tobacco, the mud was knocked out from between the logs, but there are still patches of it inside, bearing the little fingerprints of the children who helped build the barn. James remembers when his uncles all came to help his granddaddy replace the big barn's hand-split white oak shingles with tin. I forgot a lot of the stuff, though, he says, and I wish I'd found out more about it when my daddy and granddaddy were still alive, but you don't think to ask those questions when you're young. He's grateful that Barnhill is asking barn owners these questions now. It needs to be recorded and pictures kept so people will know, James says, walking the property where so many Robertses have walked before him. In not a great many years, it'll all be gone. Sooner or later, everything goes. Maybe not everything. Evelyn Anderson offers a rare treat to the visitors on the tour today, a chance to step into an even older barn on her property. The log structure was originally built as a home for her late husband's family in the 1840s, 9 generations or so ago, and there are V-shaped notches in the wall where they could prop a gun to defend against attacks from Native Americans living in the region before settlers arrived. Later, when the family grew more affluent, they moved to a house nearby and turned the cabin into a barn. As light filters through the vine-covered log walls, the high-ceiling space feels like a chapel, and Barnhill, who has never been inside before, becomes reverent. "This is why we're doing this work," he says softly, admiring the nearly 200-year-old handiwork. Recent arrivals to the countryside are also seeing the beauty and value of old barns and giving them new lives. Barnhill has worked with clients who are buying old structures, moving them to new sites, and restoring them as homes or vacation rentals. The next generation of back-to-the-landers, baby hippies, Barnhill calls them, are starting small-scale farms in the region and making use of the buildings they find on their properties. In the years since the Appalachian Barn Alliance started, Young has noticed changes at the farms he visits for his work as the Extension Service. "It just warms my heart to go to a farm, and you're looking at his grapevines or her Christmas trees, wherever they've transitioned to after tobacco. And they say, 'Ross, come here. I want to show you what I've done to the farm,' he says. They've painted and they've fixed this or that, and there's pride in it. They've seen a culture change. They've seen what the Barn Alliance is doing, and they say, 'Someone else is taking an interest in my barn, so why shouldn't I?'" Tours with the Appalachian Barn Alliance are held April through October. For information about annual events and guided, self-guided, and private tours, call 828-380-9146 or visit appalachianbarns.org. You are listening to Our State Magazine on the North Carolina Reading Service. If you have any comments on our program, please call us, studios, 919-832-5138. And now, Up Cycled and Down Home. For 3 days each month, the owners of a barn in Thomasville give the cavernous old space new purpose and a vintage goods shop and deeper meaning as a peaceful retreat. Written by Jen Tota McGivney. The Death Ridge settled over Thomasville the week of the Chartreuse barn sale. As Paula and Steve Lenman prepared for their monthly 3-day shopper's spectacle, the dramatically named heat wave stretched from Alabama to Virginia, bringing mid-90s temperatures to the area, and there was no hint of rain, much less the slightest breeze. Yet, despite the wearying temperature, cars rolled into the parking lot at 9 a.m. sharp, leaving trails of dust lingering in the still air. Even this early, the short walk from the parking lot to the barn is long enough to break a sweat. The usually welcoming Chart Rooster, a multicolored scrap metal rooster perched just outside the barn, quickly becomes too hot to touch. But inside, the heat is already an afterthought. Instagram-ready arrangements of vintage and repurposed merchandise and folk art fill the barns. On the ground, propped up on tables, hung from walls, and even tucked in rafters. Some items are new art pieces, some are retro objects, others are creatively upcycled. Everything is for sale, and all of it tells the story of North Carolina. An old leather mule bridle that traded its practical purpose for a decorative one. A 1920s school desk that vendor Jean Faust rescued from a 130-year-old Randolph County cabin before it was demolished. A tobacco basket, just like the one that shopper Pamela Sharp used as a young girl on her family's farm, and a mysterious metal box half a century old that a puzzled young boy is peering into. "Do you know what that is, Mentor Laura?" Johnson asks the boy. "People used to keep those boxes in their kitchens to store their bread in, to keep it fresh." The little boy glances up at Laura, as if she's conning him, then looks inside the box again. Sure enough, it's big enough to hold a loaf of bread. "Cool," he says, but soon he's distracted by another treasure in this pop-up shop of flea market finds. That old bread box might be the only thing cool about this 96-degree day, Paula points out. The Linehams laugh with the coincidence of another barn sale during extreme weather. These sales tend to coincide with some of the most inconvenient weather this town sees. Downpours, big winds, snowstorms, withering heat. They call this meteorological phenomenon the barn sale effect. The worst of it came in 2017 with the remnants of Hurricane Irma. "We had tin blowing around, and we had to nail it to the roof during the sale," Steve says. "But I promise you, people kept coming and shopping even during that hurricane. There must be something here other than the old stuff we're selling." That something is the barn itself and the community of vendors inside. 5 years ago, when Paula and Steve started Chartreuse, they hoped to create a place where people could find a little inner peace, along with an antique typewriter or dining table. And their idea worked. Now, when customers and vendors talk about why they come to the barn sales, they use words not often applied to shopping experiences. Peaceful, uplifting, caring. But, of course, not many shopping experiences include a chapel. Behind the barn sits a rustic chapel that the Linehams created from an old tractor shed. This space is available to anyone who seeks a few moments of quiet, and a stop here has become part of the barn sale experience. During the chapel's construction, Steve and Paula invited family and friends to write messages on the wall, and now, hidden beneath the new wood panels, are more than 300 blessings. Recent entries in the chapel's guest book suggest that folks are feeling all those good wishes. Such a powerful place. What a beautiful way to spend the afternoon. Highlight of my week. This is my happy place. My girlfriends and I call it barn therapy. When the Linehams opened the Chartreuse barn in December 2014, for only 3 days each month, they hoped to sell an experience, one that would feel more personal than a typical day of browsing and buying. "We want people to feel loved here," Steve says, "and we want people to experience beauty and peace and friendship." Before Chartreuse, Paula owned a consignment store in Greensboro, but she longed for a shop that would inspire her creativity. She found that being a store owner 5 days a week didn't allow enough time for her to pursue artistic projects. One day, a customer told her about barn sales, a concept that began in California and was working its way east. Open just a few days a month, barn sales offer artists time to create new work and owners time to host an event that draws various artists, makers, and vendors from across the community. Paula and Steve loved the idea, and they began to search for property. They wanted a barn close enough to cities and highways for easy access, but remote enough to offer country feel. For a year, they had no luck. One day, Steve went to a barn in Thomasville to buy old wood and make tables, and the perfect property found them. The owner told me, "You know, you don't just have to buy the wood. You can buy the whole barn. We're selling it," Steve recalls. They bought it. The barn's location, just off of I-85 Business, felt like the perfect spot. The nearly century-old barn was not ready to host sales, though. "If we show you some before pictures, you'll say, 'Oh, my goodness, it looks like that thing is about to fall down,'" Paula says with a laugh. "But we saw that it has potential. We'll put it that way." Some customers followed Paula from her Greensboro store. New vendors joined. The mood became collaborative, not competitive. Vendors helped with each other's stalls and shopped for each other's businesses. Soon, the three-day sale felt like a reunion, and the Lynhams and their vendors now see themselves as part of a barn family. Steve and Paula are the foundation vendor, Shelley Henning says. Every time I come, no matter how much craziness there is, Paula steps around the counter, gives me a hug, and asks how my family is doing. Or if Steve is carrying a big old thing, he'll drop it to wave and say, "Good to see you, Shelley." She pauses to wipe away a tear. That means a lot. They've created a community. That's what brings the customers here, and that's what brings the vendors here. Building a community and a business is no easy feat. Renovating the barn, managing the sales, and creating art took its toll on the Lynhams. Paula's stress hit an unhealthy level, and in 2018 she faced a much greater stressor, stage 3 ovarian cancer. With the diagnosis came tough news of her path ahead. Surgery, chemo, and a 3-year prognosis. Melanie Parsons, who worked with the Lynhams, recalled that the Barn family fell into a quiet sadness. But then they got to work taking care of the barn's business while Paula and Steve went to appointments. Doctors hoped that the surgery would remove most of the cancer. They were wrong. The surgery removed all of it. Paula was declared cancer-free, no chemo needed, and she remains cancer-free today. Cancer puts things in perspective. It changes the things that matter, she says. During that time, the vendors cared for me, and in the long run, that's what matters to me. It's not about having a great big sale and wondering if I'm going to be successful. It's about the people and relationships that we can build here. Gather the Barn family in a room, and no one talks about dollars. They share stories. They talk about customers, like the woman who found a cake pan like the one her grandmother used. They talk about setting up sales together while singing hymns, gospel tunes, and even a little Elvis. And they talk about the regulars who come here, some to shop and others simply to enjoy a little peace, even during a hurricane or Death Ridge heat wave. Some people just come here to sit in a chair out front or in the shade or go sit in the chapel, Melanie says. People will say that they don't even realize what it is. They don't know why. They just want to be here. Chartreuse Barn can be visited at 326 Litwin Drive in Thomasville, North Carolina. You can find them on Facebook as Chartreuse Barn. Fancy that. There's an ad here for Atlantic Spas and Billiards if you just want to relax at home. They're in Raleigh and Glenwood Avenue and Wilmington on Market Street. Atlantic SBNC. And Bryson City, North Carolina is at GreatSmokies.com. Have a big vacation in a small town. And how about Impressions Floor Covering Satisfaction in Every Step? ImpressionsFlooring.com. Well, that's about all the time we have for today's edition of Our State Magazine. I sure hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I am Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions? Call the studios, 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.